Hello and hi, welcome to another Slice of Sci-Fi. I'm Summer Brooks, and my special guests today are Stefan Bristol and Frederica Bailey, who have brought us a wonderful, compelling, and just heart-wrenching new science fiction family drama, I'm going to say, called See You Yesterday. They are the director and co-writers of this independent film, which grew out of a short film by the same name that was out a couple of years ago. Welcome.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you for having us.
So first, what can you tell me about the short film version of this that came out, what, 3 years ago now?
It came out three years ago. And that short film was my thesis film for New York University Graduate Film School. And I made that film because I wanted to make it as a proof of concept for the feature film.
And what was the impetus for just pulling this idea together about using, you have two teenagers in Brooklyn who figure out how to create time travel, and while they're mulling over a way to use it, a tragedy occurs and they decide to use this new discovery to try to avert that tragedy and right a wrong.
Mm-hmm. When I was working on my thesis, the first thing I was trying to do was make a feature film for the short, and my professors say I was not ready to make a feature because I haven't done a well successful short film yet. So that's okay, but the feature though, when I was writing it, I was writing a whole different story. It's about a kid who was trying to go back in time to stop their grandfather from killing their best friend who was driving that. But with the summer of 2014, where Eric Gardner and Mike Brown got murdered, and you know those murders bled into my script. You know, I had a scene of a test time jump about police brutality, and my professor at the time saw that, and she was like, you know, Stefan, this is pretty heavy in the script. You know, either you take it out or you leave it in and make that the story. And I remember, you know, Amadou Diallo, and I remember Sean Bell, and I said, you know what, unfortunately, this, you know, police brutality is not going to go away, so I'm going to make this a movie because this is a conversation that I know it needs to continue to happen. And so I decided to write the feature and then, you know, do the short. And then I needed help to co-write the script. So I went to the dramatic writing department and asked the chair to give me a list of people who think they can help me with the script. And that's where I found Frederica Bailey, my sister of mine. And I did an interview with her, you know, a very thorough,
very strong interview, very serious interview. He really grilled me. I was nervous. I was sweating.
But I'm glad I got her because she was the strongest writer in the group, and plus she's a black woman, and dealing with a black woman being a protagonist in the film, I needed her voice. And you know, thanks to her, she whipped my ass into shape with writing. And he goes, because we had, you know, CJ sounded like a dude.
Well, Frederica, what drew your interest into helping out with this project? Because there's a big difference between the short and the feature, and I could tell that there was a strong woman's hand in some of the characterizations in the women in this piece. They are very, very secure in their blackness and in their attitude, especially CJ. CJ comes across as that person who, that person who thrives on the energy of righteous anger, wanting to correct everything. Mm. And most young black women grow out of it. Some of us don't. Speaking from experience. Mm. And just what inspired you to bring all these different flavors of strong women of color into this and just give this a totally different feel from what the short had?
Well, I think one of the things I really loved when Stefan and I first met was the uniqueness of the concept. When we talked about it and he kind of explained, you know, the ideas that he had in his head, I realized it's something that I hadn't seen before. I hadn't seen these two issues ever meet before on film, and especially seeing kids, minority kids, Black kids involved in STEM and you know, thinking about college and just very forward thinking in their careers and science and math. So I was like, this is such a unique concept that really made me want to get on board with that. And the great thing with the short and the feature, because I co-wrote both, was that at least in the feature, we got to delve much more deeper. You know, the short is like 15 minutes, but obviously the feature is much longer. So we got to delve more into the other characters in the world. So we got to introduce and bring CJ's mom into existence and show her and Sebastian's grandmother and Sebastian's grandfather. And so we really got to explore the other female characters and all the characters in general that kind of inhabit that world and that neighborhood and that part of Brooklyn and kind of bring them to the forefront in ways that we really haven't seen before on film. So I think those are some of the things that we were really able to kind of dig into and just really stretch in the feature that we just didn't have the time to do in the short. Uh-huh. And that kind of really just, you know, drew me to the whole thing, to the project and to even just thinking about the feature. I know initially Stefan was like, yeah, we got to do the feature. And I was like, well, I don't know. Did we say everything in the short? And he was like, nah, there's much more to say. And, you know, he was right. There was much more to delve into. There's such a bigger world to kind of jump into and explore. So that was really something that drew me to the project in a whole.
And the focus more on the relationships between CJ and Sebastian and their friends, and then her brother and his friends, just the relationship between the people in the neighborhood, the business owners in the neighborhood, and the different sets mm-hmm. of police, that brings such a real feel to it. And the fact that that's the focus and not the splashy sci-fi angle is important, because it's yeah. more about the people and mm-hmm. what they do, how they behave with each other, where their loyalties lie, and not just the flashbang of just the science fiction toy that they're playing with. And mm-hmm. that connection really, really draws you into the film.
Yeah, but you know, but the reason for that is I needed to show just brilliant Black people on screen and show diversity of Black people on screen, because once the victim, usually how the media treats victims of police brutality, they're always trying to find some kind of flaw or some kind of blemish of their character to kind of manipulate the audience to feel like, oh, that's why they deserve to get shot wrongfully. And we remember the young man who got shot in his own apartment when a police officer walked in the wrong apartment and shot the brother while intoxicated. Mm. And then the media said, oh, well, he was smoking weed. What does have to do with the prices of tea in China? The officer was wrong every step of the way. You know what I'm saying? Whatever whatever he was doing in his apartment privately, it persists. And, Dick, that guy, you know, nothing but good things about that guy that the media don't want to portray. And he also noticed that every time there's a picture of Black people getting killed, there's always some kind of crazy mugshot or crazy looking. Never, you know, it took a while to see Mike Brown's graduation photo. A while. And I was really, really pissed off. So I wanted to show, you know, have these characters have little to no blemishes at all, and just show how beautiful they are as people. And the reason why, you know, I mean, it's very authentic, because, you know, there's you know, unfortunately, it's rough language in the film, but I just want to show how Black people be, how we expressive and comfortable with each other, and then we still respect each other in that value, how our culture is so different and unique that it's unapologetically Black. And folks need to realize that we're normal as anybody, just our culture is different than yours. And now our culture and our people and the way of our life and the way we're thinking is not It should never be a threat to any authority. It should never be a threat to other people. It should never be. We're just not. We're not prone to violence. We're just normal people anymore.
Yeah, and it's not. It's not that any one culture is inferior to the other. It's just we have different ways of living. Just let us live.
Exactly.
Let us live.
So how long did it take to film the feature? It looks just like you guys are having fun, because it looks like the cast is having fun. And I'm guessing a warm late spring day in Brooklyn.
It took summer. Thank you. Summertime.
Oh.
Yeah, it takes place on July 4th.
Right. Did you actually film it in the summer?
Yeah, we did. Yes, we did. It was a six-week prep, five-week shoot, and we had to shoot in the summer. Because our lead actors, Ed and Dr. Smith and Dr. Quicklow, they're both currently in school. And at that time, it was entering their second year in college. Eden, she's studying physics at Hampton University, and Dante's studying acting at NYU, an acting program, and they're totally brilliant. And we had to shoot that summer, otherwise we will lose the lead actors that we need. I think I work with them in short. I could bring them back. They're brilliant, and needed Eden's help as well, because she's a physicist studying. You know, she's a scientist herself, not only as an actress, and she helped with the script too.
Now, what sort of changes did you make cinematography-wise? Because the thing that jumps out to me in the feature that was very different from the short is the vibrancy of color, how bright everything is. I mean, yeah, it's summertime in New York City and the sun is shining brightly, but even the scenes at night have a lush brightness to it. What was your approach for that?
Oh, we had a great cinematographer named Felipe Valderrey. I know him for like 9 years now. He's my brother from NYU Graduate Film School. He came in the same class and graduated around the same time, I believe. He's a great filmmaker, great director as well. He helped me. Like, he helped me with the short. And I know I wanted a sense of, more saturated colors and whatnot. And he brought it in. Like, we talked about, like, okay, what kind of camera we're going to use, less, but all the camera, all the, the production design as well. He made a Hazula, had to give her a shout out as well. And my costume designer, Charlize Antoinette Jones, we all came together to make sure that we celebrated Brooklyn in the summer. And what does that mean? That not only means for the camera, not only means for the department, the production design department, and not only for the costume department. We had to work collectively together to make sure we bring out those, bring it out. So, first of all, what is the story? Kids, brilliant, and into technology, right? All right, so what kind of camera are we going to use? We're going to use a Gemini, because that's going to bring out the poppiness of it, and we use a certain lenses. Now, all of this stuff is, Felipe can explain better than I can. for my production designer, I told her I want the colors of red, gold, and green everywhere to bring out the Caribbean vibe of the neighborhood. There's a scene, and I'm not going to tell you what scene it is, but if people pay attention, there's a scene where you see three characters actually with the clothes on have the red, gold, and green. And I think Charlize did a wonderful job of it as well to make sure we organized and have that. Yeah.
Nice. So, all right, this film is actually debuting on Netflix this week, but you guys actually premiered at Tribeca a couple of weeks ago. How did that go over? What was the reception there like?
It was amazing. Tribeca was amazing, and it's actually going to be on Netflix. It's on there right now, actually. But it did debut at Tribeca, and it was just an amazing experience. Both Stefan and I, we were just like, wow, like we took our breath away. It was just wonderful to see it with the audience and to have people, especially, in New York. So we had a lot of hometown support and people who really could identify with the characters and with the film and with their neighborhood. So it was a wonderful experience for me. I just enjoyed it and soaked it all in. And, you know, this was very humbling and grateful.
Every single screening was sold out.
Wow.
Every single screening. The premiere screening was sold out. The other two public screenings were sold out. And we won second place in the audience award. So Tribeca added another screening, and that was sold out as well. And you know, so, you know, Tribeca was, it's so good to have your movie in the city that you represent. And you know, at the premiere, when the credits roll, I give a shout out to Brooklyn. Yo, people were shouting and chanting Brooklyn and standing up. And it was a wild, audience, man. Like, it was so packed, you know. It was nice, man. It's funny because Tribeca did not accept my short film, so we got the feature film in there. So it's like a full circle poetic justice thing happened. It was good.
Were any of the cast members there to share that with you?
Oh yeah, literally every single cast member was there. Unfortunately, I think Myra couldn't make it. She plays Gloria, the grandmother, in the movie. She couldn't make, for some reason, I didn't see her there. But, we had to wear carpet, the whole crew, the whole cast. Mm-hmm. It was bananas. And I invited, to the stage for the Q&A, invited Patrika, invited Eden and Dante and Stro, who plays Calvin in the movie, and Marsha Stephanie Blake as well. We all, you know, we all came upstage, had the Q&A. And it was Marsha Stephanie Blake's birthday that night as well. The premiere night was her birthday.
Wow.
So I embarrassed the shit out of her and had everyone sing happy birthday to her. and guess which version of the birthday song we sang?
Was that the Stevie Wonder version?
Yes, you're right. it was a very black audience that night, so we had to do that one.
awesome. I hope somebody got that recorded for her so she can look back on this and go, yep, they got me. Well, I'm not going to spoil this for anyone who hasn't seen it yet, but the guest appearance at the beginning of the movie of their science teacher, I had a grin on my face like you wouldn't believe. Without spoiling it, how did you swing that?
Well, I mean, you tell it better, because it was your lovely writing, so you tell it better.
Well, we initially wanted to get Neil deGrasse Tyson for the role.
Oh.
And unfortunately, he was unavailable. And it would still have been great, too. Like, that would be an amazing, you know, amazing cameo, because he was in, he was shot in Bronx Science High School. And, you know, Neil deGrasse Tyson, he was there. He graduated from there. But he was unavailable, and, you know, we needed to choose somebody. And I thought, okay, well, let's make a list of just possible, you know, cameos. And one of my, you know, shout out to my executive producers, Matthew Myers and Jason Sokoloff, who were great to work with, by the way. Freaking amazing to work with. Mm-hmm. They, you know, the boat, you know, I think one, I forgot who, which one of them told me, hey, why not we trying to get Michael J. Fox? I was like, you think we can get him? They said, yeah, let's just try. I said, all right, let's shoot for the moon, land for the stars. You know, I wasn't thinking we were going to get him, but we all wrote him a letter. The letter was authored by me, but we all really, you know, made sure the letter was perfect, correct. Just explained to him that, you know, if he become on the film, like, this role will influence, you know, other teachers around the country to pay attention to, you know, their black children in the classroom, and because they never know who is brilliant in that classroom. You know, people of color in the classroom are often overlooked. And right now, specifically Bronx Science, they only have very limited seats for black students. And I'm just like, really? That's embarrassing. In New York City? That's embarrassing, man. And I didn't know about this until like 2 weeks ago, like when I read that, like two or three, maybe a month ago when I read the article about it. But I digress. Michael J. Fox, he read the letter. He said, yeah, we are. I was like, yo, he's doing this? I was like, oh, we're on our A game now. But the day of shooting, you know, he broke his arm. And he had to go to the hospital. It was pretty bad. So unfortunately, we couldn't get him to set, and we had to reshoot another actor for his role and whatnot. And I'm glad. I'm not just glad. I'm like not glad. It's like it's a weird process that we was able to get him back later on, because during the post production and the test screenings, that classroom scene didn't test well. And unfortunately, that scene didn't test well. So we said, okay, once you get Michael J. Fox back, we're going to rewrite the scene. You know, me and Patrick, we wrote it. There were a lot of suggestions from my editor and from Matt Mize, a producer. And we came back. He was ready to go. You know, he was very apologetic. He was very happy and everything. I'm saying, man, no, it's like, I don't understand why he would like be so honored for it. It's like the honor's all mine, man. Because that day shooting it was mm-hmm. the best day of my life. Best day of my life, man. It's like I had to pinch myself like 15 times that day. You know, this one time before I got to call action, because I was just staring at the monitor looking at Matthew Fox. You know, the AD was like, okay, everybody, Slayton, roll sound, roll camera, I'm calling the market, and I'm just sitting there, oh shit, action, like, oh my God. And when I had it, when one day I was changing the lens or, you know, set up the next shot, I was like, right next to Michael, and I was like, yeah, man, I'm honored that you did this for me, and, you know, I'm just curious, what do you think of the script? He said, I didn't even read the script. I said, you didn't read the script? No, I did it because of your letter. That warmed my heart.
It was
heart,
a beautiful
man.
Letter.
Wow.
It was a beautiful letter.
Well, I for one am glad everything worked out, because his scene, even though it's short and sweet, the way he treated the students with respect, and how he knew they were trying to get one over on him, but he was like, "Nah, go ahead, just don't break anything, bring it back later." And then, just his tagline at the end is at the end of the scene was. It's just such a great classic. Callback, and I couldn't stop laughing.
Don't give it away. Don't give that one away.
Not giving that one away at all, because that's.
I'll say this. I did not write that line, and I did not directly say it. We had this, like, once we shot the scene, once we did this coverage, I said, okay, you know, Michael, we got it. We got the scene. The next couple of takes, you do whatever you want. Just do whatever you want, whatever you feel like, because we got it. He's like, all right, cool. And once he said that, the whole set could not be quiet. it was an explosion. It was crazy. Like, you know, the set was going crazy. The video village was going crazy. It was nuts.
Nice. Well, I want to thank both of you for getting this project together so that we can all see it, because it is a wonderful film. Even though the subject matter is heavy, there's still a lightness to it. And I hope everybody takes the time to see it.
Yeah, me too.
Well, thank you so much. We hope so too. Out today.
Yep, out May 17th on Netflix. Go check your queue. It's right there. You should be able to see it. Unfortunately, the short film, HBO removed it from HBO Go, so I was kind of disappointed I couldn't go back and see it again. But we have the feature film. That's good, right?
That's good. Actually, the short film is on Cinemax.
Right.
Really? They moved it.
That's right. Yeah.
Yeah, it goes back and forth, because between licensing agreement, HBO, and it also own Cinemax, so it goes back and forth. So if you have Cinemax, you can watch it on Cinemax, and I'm not sure how long. HBO don't tell me how long it stays on either platform. So if you don't see it on Cinemax, it's on HBO. If you don't see it on HBO, it's on Cinemax until February.
Pretty sneaky, sis.
But the feature film is more important. Watch the feature.
It is.
Watch the feature.
It is fresh. It has a soundtrack to die for, and I will encourage.
Shout out to Michael Abel.
I will shout out to whoever the songs in it. I am going to encourage our audience to go check it out. And I hope they spread the word too, because this movie deserves to be seen by as many people as possible.
Thank you.
Thank you so much. I'm so kind.
Well, Stefan, Frederica, thank you so much for your time today and for giving us such a beautiful film.
Thank you for having us. Thank you so much.
And we'll be back with more Slice of Sci-Fi right after this.
Slice of Sci-Fi.
Hey, you. Stop hiding behind that sofa. Come out from back there. Your sofa wants to talk to you. Wants to play footsie with your mind. Listen to it. Relax. Let it in. Starship Sofa. The first podcast ever to win a Hugo Award. With weekly stories from the world's best authors. Michael Moorcock. Peter Watts. Joe Haldeman, Peter F. Hamilton, and many, many, many more. With news and reviews and interviews. Bradbury, Pohl, Wolfe, and Mieville, the sofas chewed the fat with them all. Facts and fictions, articles and particles. Oh, why aren't you listening? StarshipSofa.com. Your best science fictional fix this side of the coffee table.
Hi, I'm Aaron Ashmore from Sci-Fi's Killjoys, and you're listening to Slice of Sci-Fi.
So, yes, if you have Netflix, go right now, put See You Yesterday on your queue, you will not be disappointed. It's a smart film. Like I said, it has a little heavy undertone to it, but it is not depressing or ghoulish. It's just a very smart film about some smart kids who want to use the technology that they've created to go back in time and fix something that never should have happened in the first place. And for me, this is a perfect example of what independent science fiction film can bring us. A story that is real, a story that is relevant, and that's what science fiction has always been about. Commentary on the times we live in. Told in such a way as to not really hammer you over the head with it, but to make you examine what's going on compared to what's going on in the world at the time. You can go back through the history of science fiction and see it over and over and over again. So many people, so many authors have done this over the decades. Octavia Butler, Ursula K. Le Guin. You have Rod Serling with The Twilight Zone. And in a lot of cases, also Outer Limits. And for newer shows, Black Mirror fits right in there. And so many others. It's out there. And I, for one, am happy we keep getting new voices telling new stories. Like I said, that's the heart and soul of independent film these days, because you're not going to see a mainstream studio, a major studio, make this film with a $25 or $50 million budget. I wish we could. Not going to happen anytime soon. And I've said it before on this podcast, on Writers After Dark, we need more voices telling more stories, because those stories are important to the world we live in and the world we want to create for the people we love to live in and future human beings on this planet to live in. And yes, we have interviews with the creators, the filmmakers for a few other independent films coming up soon, so stay tuned for that. But if you have any questions or comments, please feel free to call in. The number is 602-635-6976. Leave a voicemail message, ask a question, leave a comment, or you can send an email to summer@sliceofsci-fi.com, and I'll answer your questions there. You can listen to Slice of Sci-Fi through iTunes, through Stitcher, through Google Play, and TuneIn, and Player FM. And if you're listening on iTunes or Stitcher, please leave us a review. Let everyone else know that you are enjoying the show and maybe they should check it out for themselves. You can follow us on Twitter at Slice of Sci-Fi. You can check us out on YouTube. We're Slice of Sci-Fi there. And of course, we have the website, sliceofsci-fi.com, where you can leave a comment on the shows, ask your questions in the comments there, or leave a counter review. I'm not sure that's even the right word, but if you disagree with a review someone has done for a TV show or a movie, you can weigh in your own self. I would also like to thank everyone who is supporting the family of science fiction entertainment here at Slice of Sci-Fi. And that also covers Writers After Dark, the archives for Babylon Podcast, and the archives for Charlie Jade, the Charlie Jadeverse. So check those out if you need something old to reminisce with, or if you've never come across it before. Your pledges through Patreon and your donations through PayPal are greatly appreciated because you are helping to literally keep the lights on around here. If you want to help add your own support, the place to go is patreon.com/sliceofsci-fi, or you can go to the PayPal link. Just do a donation every now and then. That link is paypal.me/sci-fi-summer. And yes, I'd like to remind everybody, we do have a contest running, a Secret Sauce Conic contest. We throw that in there every now and then because I have books and DVDs to give away, and mostly because I'm running out of space to store them. This month, we are giving away a handful of items from the Science Fiction and Horror selections here. The way to enter is you go to sliceofsci-fi.com, click on the contact button, and you will see a form, a magical form. Fill out your name and email address. Please use a real email address because I need to reply to you to find out how to send your prize to you if you won. So you fill that information out, select have a different question for the subject, okay? After you do that, in the message box, you need to type the phrase, "The night is dark and full of terrors." You heard me right. It's Game of Thrones finale weekend, so we're going with "The night is dark and full of terrors." Once you do that, you should see a list of available prizes appear. It'll just pop up there. If you don't see that list of prizes to select from, you got the phrase wrong. I'm just going to tell you now, if you send that in without filling out your prizes, you did it wrong. So you can select from the prizes. Yes, you can select more than one because this is random. If I pick your entry and the prize you've selected has already been given away to somebody else, I can't do anything for you. So pick two or three, and we'll have fun from there. And then just submit it. I will collect them all, and at a given date in the future, we will select some winners, and people will have prizes on their doorsteps, hopefully soon after. I'd like to also send a heartfelt, loving shout out to the geek rock band Sci Fried for providing the theme music for Slice of Sci-Fi. I love you guys. If you like your rock and roll geek flavored, like I sometimes do, you can listen to more music by them at their website, sci-fried.com. But that will do it for this episode. Thank you, everyone, for listening, and we'll be back with more Slice of Sci-Fi next week. Take care.